You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Welcome to the program. It's a big day. Hope you got out and voted. And if you haven't gone yet, be prepared to wait in line for a little while. Tony Dungy will join us coming up a little bit. Rich Eisen on loan from the NFL Network. And Cameron Jordan, the great defensive end of the New Orleans Saints, will join us as well. Phone calls, fire them up, 877-3DP-SHOW. Marvin standing by. We'll have emails and tweets. Mario doing the honors there. Poll question, play of the day, stat of the day. Say good morning to Peacock, our great TV partner, and the Fox Sports Radio lineup, and a part of our 367 radio affiliates around America. The Bucs held on, beat the Giants last night. The NFL is considering playoff expansion. The 49ers losing Jimmy Garoppolo and George Kittle. We'll have those stories to explore coming up in a little bit. 877-3DP-SHOW, email address dp@danpatrick.com, Twitter handle @DPShow. No formula for finding a franchise quarterback, and never more apparent than what we've seen this year. I don't know what the Giants have in Daniel Jones. You know, sometimes you find a bargain, sometimes you waste a high draft pick. Giants used a high draft pick on Daniel Jones. I don't know if they wasted a high draft pick on Daniel Jones. And then you find a bargain like Tom Brady and the Patriots did back in the day. But one thing's for sure, it's an elusive task to find your franchise quarterback. Not that many teams get it right. The Bucs did get it right, and they're a contender, a Super Bowl contender. The Giants are in a different situation right now. They do play hard. They have to play hard because they're not a very good team. Daniel Jones has all the tools. He can run, throw, athleticism. Problem is, can't avoid turnovers. You can't play the position if you can't avoid turnovers. Just ask Jameis Winston. Last night, two costly interceptions in the two-point loss. And it has to be frustrating for Giants fans because you watch Daniel Jones forcing things that he doesn't have to. Tom Brady and the Buccaneers didn't play great last night, but Brady took care of the football. And sometimes that's the most important thing. And Jones is only in his second season. But the NFL is moving on quicker and quicker at this position. The fact that the Dolphins want to find out now if Tua Tagovailoa is their quarterback for the future should tell you everything. Because they have the Texans draft pick this year. And if the Texans would somehow end up with the worst record in football, the second worst record in football, third or fourth, maybe there's a package deal, maybe you go after Trevor Lawrence. This is how teams are thinking. You think you got your franchise quarterback, and you realize you don't. Chicago Bears thought they had their franchise quarterback, went up to get Mitchell Trubisky. The Bears, they've done this before. This was one of those glaring mistakes, and it's going to haunt them for a while. The Browns with Baker Mayfield, they don't know what they have with Baker Mayfield right now. But if you're trying to correct these mistakes and deliver on promise that the team saw in Daniel Jones when they drafted him in 2019, it better happen sooner because later they're probably going to take a quarterback. If they're up there again, they probably will. McLevin, you got a poll question. This program brought to you by the great folks at the Breeders' Cup on NBC Sports this Friday and Saturday. The world's best thoroughbreds compete in 14 exhilarating races at the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Learn more at breederscup.com/2020. Catch all the action live on NBC Sports.
Okay, question of the day. If you're the Giants and let's say you have a top three pick, are you moving on from Daniel Jones? It's sort of being discussed all throughout the media world.
Right now, they would have the second pick overall, which means they'd have to decide on Daniel Jones or Justin Fields or trade it down. Yeah, Paul.
Is the person who drafted Daniel Jones still employed by the New York Giants?
I don't think he's along for the ride.
Isn't that everything?
Dave Gettleman.
Because if he goes another quarterback, then he's admitting a mistake. If there's a new GM before the draft, I would assume he goes in his own direction.
I would think Gettleman, if he's still there, is staying with Daniel Jones. That would be my gut feeling. I don't know if you trade the pick. I don't know what's going to happen at the top of the draft. I don't know who's going to go all in and, you know, what it will take to get up to number two or number one. But if Dave Gettleman is still the GM, I don't think that he wants to give up on his quarterback. Yes, McLevin.
Do you think the Giants really stay around the 1-2 win thing, though? They're so close. I mean, they should have four wins now.
Well, being in the NFC East, it feels like they're going to accidentally pick up a couple of wins. And they might end up with four wins this year. You know, Jacksonville, Houston, obviously the Jets, Dallas, Washington. I mean, all of these, there's teams, but I don't think anybody's as worse off as the Jets are right now. The Giants play hard. Said that yesterday. They play hard. They could have taken this to overtime. And, you know, there's controversy at the end of the game. And Joe Judge, the Giants head coach, he makes sure that he compliments the official in a way, because he was critical. He was in an official's face after the no call. So they call pass interference on the two-point conversion with Deion Lewis and Antoine Winfield Jr. And here's Joe Judge after the game on the official making the right call.
Nate made the right call when he threw the flag. So I'm not sure why it got picked up. We had a pretty good view. I know they can't use a Jumbotron for replay. We had a pretty clear view of that as well. But I thought Nate made the right call the first time. I thought, you know, normally your first instinct is the right one. So
Nate is Nate Jones. He was the field judge. And then they huddle up. And there's no replay to look at. Like, they're just huddling up. That's where I think that the home office is in their ear to say, you know what, we're looking at this from about four different angles here, and I think we could pick up that flag. Let's go home. It was one of those, is it enough to overturn the call? That's what I thought it was bang-bang, and I understood. I wouldn't have called pass interference. I thought it was really, really close. If Winfield doesn't get his arm on the ball, then Deion Lewis probably catches it. He didn't have his, he wasn't even facing the quarterback. It was kind of blindly putting his, you know, arm out there. And he made contact with his body. To me, that's sort of part of jostling for position. And I'm not trying to, you know, hey, they threw a flag to bail out Daniel Jones. It was a bad throw. Like, he lacks anticipation. And he should have thrown that probably 2 seconds earlier. And it's not an issue there. And they go into overtime. I wouldn't have called it. I thought it was okay. But I think the NFL has to have, you know, complete transparency. The NFL, if you whenever there's doubt, just throw a flag. And then you let the home office help you here. And I think that's what's happening now. But I'm okay with getting the call right. I just, you know, these officials on the field, it feels like they're just going, just throw the flag. And then they wait. They huddle up. And then they wait for somebody to speak into their headset to say, you know what, you can pick that up. That's not pass interference. Or, hey, there was enough there. You know, let's let it stand. Yeah, McLovin.
Two questions. If Tom Brady had thrown that pass, would that flag have been picked up? And if there were fans in the crowd, 80,000 people screaming in that stadium, would they have picked it up?
I think those are both legitimate questions to ask. Brady probably gets the call. If the fans are there, the Giants probably get the call. You know, you got this antiseptic, this sterile environment there, and it's Daniel Jones, and it was a poorly thrown pass. And I think because of that, they gave Antoine Winfield a little more room there, that it was thrown, you know, back shoulder behind him. And I think that, you know, had he thrown it correctly, then there was no issue. He sort of made it a closer call by the fact that it was a bad pass. Yeah, Paul.
Did the Monday Night Football sound guy pump in fake sound of Giants fans booing when the call was overturned? I didn't hear that. Yeah. It was light. It was muted.
Yeah, I didn't hear that either. Did anybody think it was pass interference? McLovin, you would have let it stand. Okay.
I don't disagree with anything you said. It was super bang bang. But I thought that his body got in the way. Like, that's what they call pass interference. It was a terrible throw, and the receiver was coming back, and he ran into the defender, basically. But that's kind of what pass interference is, but it was so bang bang.
The hands, that's always the great indicator for me. Where are your hands and what are they doing? And I thought that if he made contact with his chest and he didn't have his hand, he didn't hook him and he had his arm out. I mean, he got lucky because he deflected it. But if you want to play the conspiracy theory, if you're the NFL, don't you want overtime? Tom Brady in overtime against the Giants? So these people say, oh, you know what? They didn't want to give the call. You know, they didn't want to give the call to, or they wanted Brady to win. And I'm thinking, if I'm the NFL, I how many more commercial breaks do I get? 4 or 5 in overtime? Yeah, McLovin.
You were into the 11th. I think you might have been past the window on the East Coast, which was watching the Giants and the Bucks. But everyone was tweeting, oh, they want Tom in the Super Bowl. That was a popular Twitter conspiracy theory.
Well,
and I do. That'd be great.
Anybody else think it was pass interference? No. And Jones made a bad pass. I think he because of that, it made it a little easier for the official to go, you know, Lewis is coming sort of back into him as well. And, you know, he was at least 1 second, 1.5, 2 seconds late in releasing that ball. He lacks that anticipation. And you see that where I'm waiting for you to be open. In the NFL, you throw it and then they get open. It's not you're open, I'm throwing. Because if you do it that way, he won't be open by the time you throw it. Yeah, McLovin.
One other thing. Remember that face guarding used to be called PI?
Yeah.
When, to me, I thought that was a big deal when he doesn't look at the ball, you usually throw a flag.
But he didn't face guard him.
Right, right. And they actually changed that. Face guarding is now legal. As long as you don't interfere, you can. I never understood. Real quick holding question. What is holding, and is it only when the defensive guy slips on the field that they call it? To me, I never understand holding.
You're talking about offensive holding.
Offensive holding on the line. It feels like the same block every time they just randomly decide to throw it. Or am I crazy?
Yeah, Paul.
Offensive holding is now only called when the defensive lineman kind of looks like he's been shot or pulled, or his jersey is completely being pulled from his body. Where if we could see it clearly at home without replay, that's when it gets called down, which is a great thing. Remember how much we complained about holding last year? They said no more.
Well, we complained, and then Brady complained, and then they stopped calling holding.
You put us together.
With Brady.
Yeah.
Yes. Pre-lawsuit. Yes, Seton.
Jason Pierre-Paul was able to get one of those calls last night where he's like running through the line, and then got, and all of a sudden it was like somebody yanked him back and went down, and they're like, I don't know if he was really hit quite that much, but it was the cell that really got it.
It's like the scene out of Platoon. With Willem Dafoe at the very end of the movie when he gets shot. In slow motion. The Giants, though, in close games, man, they played 4 straight games decided by 4 points or less. They've lost 3 of those 4. It's only the 5th time in their history they've had this kind of streak this long in a single season. So they are playing hard. They kept it close. And I thought it was saying more about the Buccaneers. I expected the Giants to be tough at home, believe it or not. You know, this is Brady at the Meadowlands, and I didn't think they looked crisp, anything, you know, out of the ordinary. I thought that there was like, okay, and you got to win these games, but they were very close to losing that game. Here is Tom Brady after the game.
The interceptions were huge for us, and then defense really helped us out getting a few interceptions, and then the touchdown to Gronk, he made a great catch because the ball got tipped at the line of scrimmage. He had great concentration on that, and then Mike's was an incredible catch. So those guys are making a lot of plays. We obviously didn't play the way we were capable tonight, but it's still good to go get a win.
And we'll talk to Tony Dungy about this, NBC Sports, the Hall of Fame coach. Yeah, Seton.
Just to piggyback off of Andrew's earlier thoughts,
yeah.
If Tom Brady wasn't the quarterback of Tampa Bay, mm-hmm. and this was a 1 o'clock game on Sunday, would mm-hmm. we be talking about this final play?
No. No. But we know what's at stake here with the Buccaneers.
With the Giants, I mean.
No, the Giants and Daniel Jones. Have you seen enough where you go, yep, Daniel Jones is our franchise quarterback? He's making mistakes that are normal, or this used to be normal, with younger quarterbacks. And he does have athleticism there. I don't know if you can teach him how not to force the ball and have some anticipation and not fumble. Like, these are really big issues. That's why Jameis Winston needed to go back to school, quarterbacking school. And that's what he's doing in New Orleans. Because I do think he's a starting quarterback in the NFL. I just don't think his approach sometimes is smart. You're forcing things, and you can't force it in the NFL. Brett Favre did it and made a Hall of Fame career out of it. Very, very few quarterbacks. And Brett Favre threw more interceptions than anybody in the history of the sport. You can't force it. And I think that what you saw with Daniel Jones last night, he was trying to make something happen. Yeah, Paul.
And Favre kind of reminds me of like Carson Wentz. We were talking about him yesterday. Carson Wentz has all the negatives that Favre had, but he doesn't have as many positives. He kind of did a couple years ago, and I know his team is not that good, his line's not that good, but Wentz and Favre had more upside, more consistent upside, it feels like, than Carson Wentz has, at least lately.
Yeah, that's another issue. You look at the Eagles with Carson Wentz. Where are they with Carson Wentz? Now, we're looking at the 49ers with Jimmy Garoppolo. Has Jimmy Garoppolo played his last down, you know, with the San Francisco 49ers? I don't know. but it feels like we're getting to those points. Like Cam Newton. People wanted Cam to get an extension after week two. Now all of a sudden it's like, well, they only paid him $1 million. That's good. Patriots going to be in the market for a quarterback. Are the Eagles going to go with Jalen Hurts eventually? The Bears are going to go back to Mitchell Trubisky. That's why when we made this argument, or this argument kind of surfaced about who's more important to the Patriots and their success, Bill Belichick or Tom Brady? And I think I go back and forth, and then the more I think about it, the more I go, if you don't have a franchise quarterback, I don't care who your coach is. When you have that franchise quarterback, he will bail you out, because whatever you do prior to the game, in drafts and free agencies, this is the guy who has to make it happen on the field. Unless you have the steel curtain, the purple people eaters, the fearsome foursome, or the Ravens with Trent Dilfer as your quarterback, it's really hard to win that way, and especially now. And that's why I look at what Brady has done. Brady with the Buccaneers is going to be a difference maker, and they're going to be a Super Bowl contender. Brady in New England is still better than Cam Newton in New England for a variety of reasons. The biggest problem I have with the Patriots has been Bill Belichick's inability to draft. Look at the last couple of drafts. That's on Bill Belichick. And had he made a couple of good draft picks, then they wouldn't be in this position. They would have some skilled position players. N'Keal Harry has been a bust. They did get Chandler Jones, which was a great draft pick. But look at Bill's drafts. That's the reason why they're in this situation. He talked about they went all in to win those Super Bowls. If you draft well at the end of the Ravens are the Ravens because they're great. They play in the postseason. They've won a Super Bowl. And they're able to get good draft picks late in the first round. Kansas City Chiefs, you get a good draft pick at the end of the first round. That's the difference. And I think Bill has done a terrible job with his draft picks the last 4 years. That's why they're in this position right now. All right, we'll take a break. Whoa! Yeah, it's fact. It is fact with, you know, who he's drafted. You know, they've done well. You know, they got some guys, you know, the McCourties and Stephon Gilmore. But this was about Brady keeping things together. At least in my opinion. Because Bill didn't do his job. Therefore, Tom didn't want to stay. There's no skill position players. If Tom has skill position players, Tom is probably still there. Because football would be fun to him in New England, in spite of dealing with Bill Belichick. Tony Dungy will join us coming up next. It's 18 after the hour. This is The Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to The Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for The Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com, or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Did we settle on a poll question, McLovin, before we get to Tony Dungy?
Yeah, I put up there, if the Giants did end up with a top three pick, would they draft a quarterback, just to start with?
Man, we have sped up the process of deciding if a quarterback can be a franchise quarterback. It's crazy. This maybe goes back to Josh Rosen, where you go, no, we're done. Let's bring in Kyler Murray. The Bears with Mitchell Trubisky waiting a little bit longer. The Browns with Baker Mayfield. The fact the Dolphins want to find out if Tua can play right now, in case they get a really high draft pick? Yeah, McLovin.
Is that partly rookie salary cap and you can afford?
When you get that rookie salary at that position, that's where you can build around a quarterback. It can't be usually the other way around. He's the Hall of Fame coach, NBC Football Night in America, joining us on the program. Good to see you again, Tony. Let me start there. When did we start to speed up the process of when we evaluate a quarterback, whether he can be your franchise quarterback or not?
Well, I think it really has been in the last 10 years, maybe since I left, because I know that was a situation where you drafted a guy and you had to see. I went to Tampa in 1996. Trent Dilfer had been there 2 years. And Rich McKay, part of the deal was, hey, we've got to see if this number six pick in the draft can pan out. So you aren't going to be evaluated until we find that out. You're not going to be evaluated as a coach But we've got to find out. And that was our game plan for 2 years. And it seems like we have left that. If I get a chance to pick another guy and this guy is a more solid franchise quarterback, let's go. You have to have a quarterback to win. There's no question about that. But some of these guys need some time, Dan, to progress.
But have you seen enough of Daniel Jones?
No, I haven't, because I see sometimes, like last night, where, gosh, you missed a couple of easy touchdown passes. You end up throwing interceptions when we had everything set up. But then I saw some other games. I saw last year he played a beautiful game against the Bucs and beat them. So you're going to have a little bit of that. Peyton Manning was, I think, 4 years in the league when we got there to Indianapolis, and he had a 500 record. So let's not say that, you know, in 2 years you're going to see everything you need to see.
That play at the end of the game, the call on the field, and then they picked up the flag. What would you have done?
I don't like that, because John Perry said, well, pass interference has to be clear and obvious. Well, the official knew that when he threw the flag. He knows the rule for pass interference. So I have to see clear and obvious before I throw the flag. I throw it, and then someone else tells you, no, that's not really clear and obvious. The offensive pass interference on Toilolo was the same thing. Was that clear and obvious? No, we had a conversation about that. Same thing happened in the Green Bay, Minnesota game. They picked up a flag that was clearly pass interference. It was thrown, and then somehow the flag gets picked up. So, no, I don't like those.
It feels like when in doubt, throw the flag and then let the home office of the NFL officials get in touch with you and say, you know what, pick the flag up, or no, that is pass interference. As a coach, do you have a problem if the officials on the field are probably not making the final decision on some of these calls?
I don't have a problem if it goes that way the whole time. If that's our system, let's do that. But the two bogus holding penalties that they had earlier in the game, letting the home office look at that and say, hey, you know what? That really wasn't holding. If we're going to do that on everything, great. But don't just do it on the last play of the game when five other plays could have made a difference as well. So if we're going to do it, let's do it all the time.
What kind of questions remain for the Buccaneers and Brady?
I think it's a matter of timing and just consistency and building that. You see, Tom looks so much more comfortable. He's got a better connection. My question is, we saw how long it took with Gronk. Gronk took a year off. And the first part of the season, what was everybody saying? Oh, Gronk's not the same. Tom doesn't have that with him. And now we're seeing that connection after 8 or 9 weeks. Antonio Brown has been off how many years? A year and a half? Now, how long is it going to take to get that connection with him? And everybody says, oh, yeah, he looks great and he's in shape. But Tom Brady is going to need to see him come out of routes. How is he going to run this route against this? What are we going to do? And so is it going to take another 6 weeks to get adjusted to Antonio Brown? I think they've got a great team right now. And I hope this kind of experiment with Antonio doesn't set that back a little bit.
Would you have brought him in?
I probably wouldn't have, because I would have wanted to hear some contrition first. Some, I'm sorry, and I'm different now, and I've changed. I believe in second chances. You know that, Dan. But I also believe people need to repent and say, you know what, I was wrong. So, yeah, what I did in New England, what I did in Oakland, what I did in Pittsburgh, that was wrong. What I've done, and I've been out, I've missed the game, and I want to come back, and I'm going to change. If I hear that, then I'm all for it. But I haven't heard that yet.
What team are you all in on right now?
Nobody. I think everybody has some issues. Rodney Harrison and I had this debate on Sunday night. Oh, Kansas City, you know, they're the team to beat. Well, Kansas City has some defensive issues as well. I love their offense and where they're going, but I see some of those things creep up. And Pittsburgh is undefeated, but we see leads being blown. I saw coverages where I couldn't understand what was happening. Nobody's around Willie Snead. And so that's not great. But then you see the plays that they make to make things happen. So, yeah, they've got a lot of talented guys. I love their receiving core now. I love Ben being in control. But they've got some issues. So I think that's just where we are. Fundamental football, time management, all those things we've lost that dealing with this pandemic and not practicing. So I think somebody's going to emerge here in the next few weeks. But we're still in that discovery phase, I think.
He's the Hall of Fame coach, Tony Dungy, on loan from NBC Football Night in America. It feels like the game is all about offense. You can't have too much offense. The Seahawks wanting to get more offense in there. Kansas City using their draft pick to get more offense in there. Is that where we are right now in the NFL? That, you know, can you build a defensive-minded team that is a Super Bowl contender?
I don't think in this salary cap era and the way you have to do it, there's not going to be a Legion of Boom that leads a team to a championship with defensive play. You're going to have some good defenders. You're going to have a defense that helps you win, but you got to have a quarterback. You got to have an offense that can score. And I think if I were coaching now, I would go down that road. Hey, I want Antonio Brown to add to my three other playmaking receivers, because the more I can score, the better off we're going to be. The rules say that. Everything lends itself to that. And when you have to decide how to spend your money, who you're going to pay, you need to pay those offensive guys, no doubt.
But when you had Peyton, did Peyton always want you to draft an offensive player?
No, not necessarily, but we did. But that's one of the things Bill Polian told me. We're always going to feed the monster. So you got on defense, you got to make it work. We've got to get guys like Robert Mathis in the fourth round who are great players, but it comes down the line. In the first round, I remember, boy, there was a mock draft, and everybody's saying my second year there, we got to go defense. And Bill said, hey, Dallas Clark is going to help us win championships. We got to take him. We were number 27, 26 on defense, and we fed the monster and Joseph Addai. And we kept doing that, and we got enough offensive guys. We had to find the defensive guys, and we got some guys kind of under the radar, but offense was going to win it for us. And I think we're even farther along in that now, in this era.
What would you do with Jimmy Garoppolo if you're the 49ers?
I think I would stay with him. And he's played some games where, that stretch last year when they're as good as anybody in football, when they run the football and when they're playing defense, Jimmy Garoppolo is very good. And there's a lot of quarterbacks like that. So I've got one that I know can take me to a Super Bowl. I think I would stay with it. But you've got to have that core around him, no doubt.
But if you're Bill Belichick, would you at least inquire about trading Garoppolo back to New England?
No, because I think when you let him go, that told me something right there. If I thought Jimmy Garoppolo was the next Tom Brady, I'm not letting him go, no matter what anybody says or what happens. So that gave me a little buyer beware when they let him go. New England doesn't let good players just go for free. Hey, I'm going to do you a favor, San Francisco. Here's a really great quarterback. Good luck. No, he had some concerns, and I don't know what those were, but I think that ship has sailed.
Well, I don't think Tom wanted the competition there.
I don't know about that. Even if that's true, Bill Belichick doesn't care about people's feelings. Okay. And there's a lot of people that had suggestions for how they should do things, and Belichick is going to do it his way. And if he really thought, we'll make this work, Tom, if Jimmy Garoppolo is the heir apparent, he's the next guy, you're 40 years old. And I know that you've been with me and we've won all these Super Bowls, but this guy can get me to five more Super Bowls in the next 10 years. I think your feelings are going to have to get hurt, Tom.
How long do you stay with Cam Newton?
I think you ride it out this year. You built this around a running attack and all of those things. And this is the way you can win. Maybe you can turn it around and get it going. If not, you're not going to be able to go to Jarrett Stidham and all of a sudden turn this into a drop back.
But don't you need to find out if he can play, Tone, or do you think Belichick knows what he has in Jarrett Stidham?
I think he kind of understands that. Otherwise, he wouldn't have gone out to get Cam Newton.
Yeah.
I think that, again, when you made that move, that told me, I like Jarrett Stidham, but I'm not sold on him yet.
And you had Edgerrin James, who's a Hall of Famer, but I wonder about that position as we move forward. You have to be pretty much a guy who can run but also catch the ball out of the backfield. Where do you place your priorities on your running back in the draft?
I think you look at what people have done. Look at San Francisco. If they can put Deebo Samuel back there and make yards and run the ball well. And you look at Kansas City, and gosh, we thought, oh, LeSean McCoy, and then he kind of got nicked up, and Damian Williams went in there, and now he's opted out, and what are we going to do? Oh, we'll draft Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And, you know, we kind of went through that with Edgerrin. Bill Polian came to me. I'll never forget it, Dan. He said, you know, we can pay Edgerrin. He deserves it. He's a great player. He's been the heart and soul of us. But if we sign him to what he is going to command, we're not going to be able to re-sign Reggie Wayne and Dallas Clark and Dwight Freeney. So the better way to go would be to let Edgerrin go. We'll draft a young running back. We'll get them at the rookie rate, and we're going to get Maurice Jones-Drew or Joseph Addai. And that's exactly what happened. So, you know, I think that's the way you go down the road. You say, hey, if I'm Kansas City, yeah, I'd love to have that great back. But you know what? I'll get one. I'll get one in the draft.
Would you trade for J.J. Watt? Would you trade him if you're the Texans?
I might think about it now, depending on what I could get, because my season and next year is going to be a rebuilding year, and I don't have high draft choices. So as painful as it would be, and you're giving up a big-time playmaker, to recoup some of that and to be able to build my offense, I might have to think about it.
I don't know what he's worth. Like a second, maybe a third-round pick? Do you even get that for J.J. Watt?
You might get a second. And somebody like Seattle, now they got Carlos Dunlap, but if J.J. Watt were dangling out there and you thought, man, I can get to the Super Bowl, that one guy who can rush the passer, maybe get that one sack in the NFC Championship game that I need, you'd think about that. We did that, Booger McFarland. We needed a run-stopping nose tackle. We had a lot of injuries up front. And we said, hey, second-round pick, I know Booger, he can fit in the system. And he played great for us and helped us win a Super Bowl. Was it worth the second-rounder? You bet it was.
It's great to talk to you again. Hope things are well with the family there. And my best to everybody on Football Night in America.
All right. Sounds good, DP. Always great to talk to you.
That's Tony Dungy, Hall of Fame head coach. We'll come back. We got our play of the day and your phone calls coming up. I got an interesting stat of the day as well. We're back after this in the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Oh, my God.
The play. The play is called play of the day.
Runner left side, got it!
Check this out.
Play action fake. Brady throws toward the end zone. Caught. Ball. Gronkowski. Touchdown Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Boy, that combination clicks for the 93rd time, and they're now second place all time in quarterback to receiver touchdowns.
Courtesy of 98 Rock, the Buccaneers Radio Network. Second most all time for any duo. 93 touchdown passes for Brady and Gronk. They sit behind Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison, who combined for 114 touchdowns. Third on that list, by the way, is Steve Young to Jerry Rice, 92 career touchdowns. Play of the day brought to you by Breeders' Cup. This Friday and Saturday, the world's best thoroughbreds compete in 14 great races at the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Learn more at breederscup.com/2020. Catch all the action live on NBC Sports. I was talking about Bill Belichick. And, you know, Belichick said that they sold out. They did everything they could to win these Super Bowls. He had this to say yesterday.
We paid Cam Newton $1 million. I mean, it's obvious we didn't have any money. It's nobody's fault. That's what we did the last 5 years. We sold out and won 3 Super Bowls, played in the fourth, and played in an AFC Championship game. This year we had less to work with. It's not an excuse. It's just a fact.
He's referring to the team's salary cap issues. That's courtesy of WEEI. The Patriots' first 6 picks from last year's draft have started a grand total of 2 games for the Patriots this season. People talk about the Patriots' skill positions, how bad they were last year. They took 2 skill position guys in the draft, a pair of tight ends who have 1 catch between them. A Patriot tight end, the total of tight ends have 10 total receptions this season, last among all teams. They do not have a touchdown reception by a tight end all this year. But you got to go back even further than this, that they have whiffed on first and second round picks. You know, Chandler Jones was very good, but I don't know how many of those draft picks are still with the team. N'Keal Harry's not going to be there for much longer. And I think people looked at, did they get the right guy? You want Sony Michel or Nick Chubb? And they took Sony Michel. Yeah, McLeod.
Also, sorry if you mentioned the Mohamed Sanu deal last year. They missed. He's really bad at particularly wide receiver, too.
But let's say they had a couple of skills. Let's say they got a wide receiver, one of these wide receivers in the last couple of years. Then, you know, that's a difference maker. They could have taken DK Metcalf. Now, granted, it's hindsight here, but they're the ones doing all their research. They would know if DK Metcalf can play or not. A lot of teams passed on him, in fairness to the Patriots, but they've missed on these skill position players. You have no tight end. Running back situation, you have good running backs. You don't have a great running back. Not that you need it, but if you're going to take one high like they did with Sony Michel, did you get the right running back? And then they whiffed on N'Keal Harry. Completely whiffed. To the point where Tom didn't even want to throw the ball to him. If the play was called in, Tom did not want to throw the ball to N'Keal Harry. Yeah, Paulie.
Also now and going forward, it was a cool place to play when Tom Brady was the quarterback. But, you know, you hear guys like Chris Long, they got to dodge fast once they got their ring. That doesn't seem like a place where free agents are going to go to. And they're not going to spend for them because I don't know if anyone wants to have that style of coaching where it's not fun.
Well, you'll go if you have a chance to win a ring. But now you don't have a chance to win a ring, who's going to want to go there? And if you're going to base this off, well, Bill, he'll make this up in the draft. That's not the case. And then if you're not getting free agents there, who's your quarterback? You don't have skill position players. Is Stephon Gilmore there much longer? The McCourty brothers. I'm not quite sure. But look, Bill went all in getting Cam for a bargain. And I think that they've come to the realization they're just not a good football team. They might be average at best this year. But if you're going to bank on Bill is going to make this right in the draft, I wouldn't bank on that. He's a great coach. The general manager moves, I have great questions about. And I think that's why they're in this situation. They went in for Jared Stidham. You had Garoppolo. Was Garoppolo your franchise? Could you have gone to him sooner and gotten rid of Tom Brady? I start to come back to it's you have the quarterback. When you have the quarterback, then you can start building a team. If you don't have the quarterback, I don't care how good the rest of the team is. It will take a monumental effort from different people on different sides of the ball to make you a Super Bowl contender. And in today's NFL, it's all about having a franchise quarterback. The teams that don't have one, that's where we have doubts. Now, Seattle's got their franchise quarterback. I think Arizona's got their franchise quarterback. The Bengals have their franchise quarterback. The Chargers look like they found their franchise quarterback. We don't know about the Browns. Steelers have a franchise quarterback. You know, the Saints, this will be the last year for their franchise quarterback. I mean, the Packers have a franchise quarterback. These are all teams that are in contention here. It's really rare when you go, you know, they don't have a great quarterback, but they're in contention to win the Super Bowl. The defense will make a couple of plays as Kansas City did last year, but it'll be based off of your quarterback. You'll get there because you're quarterback. Kansas City won a Super Bowl because their defense came up with a couple big plays there. And the Niners, who don't have a franchise quarterback, he didn't make a couple of plays when he needed to. Whether that's fair or not, he did not. Because I can blame the defense with the Niners as well. Their quarterback made a couple of plays when he needed to. Yeah, Paul.
It's so fascinating to see how a perception changes because Sam Darnold, he's not playing well, of course, and Daniel Jones is not playing well, but there's some promise there, but if you happen to get 1-2, that's it. Your hand is forced. The fans aren't going to let you pass these days. 5 years ago, they would have let you pass on the next quarterback. Not now.
And I don't know if Daniel Jones is going to be there for the long haul. You know, the mistakes are the things that, I mean, they're alarming. You know, that's not just a coincidence. That's habit forming. And you know, Joe Judge, who was there in New England with Brady, is not going to stand for that. And if Dave Gettleman is, I don't know if Dave Gettleman is back as their GM. I'm assuming he's not. And if he's not, the new GM comes in. Does the new GM say, I want my quarterback? And that's how tricky these things are. Like the Bears are going to go back to Mitchell Trubisky. And I get it because I said I would treat Nick Foles like a reliever. Not that he's Mariano Rivera, but I would treat him like that. Like, special time, special situation, you come in. I just don't think he's a starter. But I don't know if Mitchell Trubisky is not, but at least I have to find out, like absolutely find out right now, the rest of this season, can Mitchell Trubisky play at a consistent level that you're comfortable with? And if not, you're going to be moving on from both of those quarterbacks. Carter in Atlanta joins us this morning. Good morning, Carter. What's on your mind?
Hello, Dan. Thank you so much for taking my call today. I'm a huge fan. I listen to you every night. So for the Georgia's playing Florida this weekend. Do you think they're going to win, or how do you think they're going to do, and who do you think they're going to play at QB?
You tell me. How do you think they're going to play?
I mean, I think they're going to play good, because they've played good against Florida the last couple years. Their defense is really good. But I don't know about their QB situation. Stetson Bennett has not been producing in the last couple of weeks. Do you think they'll look to another alternative?
Well, I think they'll stay with Stetson. I think so.
Why do you think the COVID-19, why do you think they're different in each conference? Because for the Big Ten, it's 21 days. But for the for Clemson, it's only 10 days for Trevor Lawrence.
All right. Well, thank you, Carter. Well, we appreciate you joining us. You know, it's conference priorities. And by the way, as I found out and told you yesterday, it's not 10 days. 10 days is isolation. It's a total of 14 days to actually come back in the ACC from what my source told me yesterday. That's why, if it was just 10 days, well, even 12 days, then Trevor Lawrence would be able to play in this game against Notre Dame. But there is a certain protocol that you have to follow. With 10 days of isolation, you have to have 2 days of just cardio. Then you can come back to, I believe, 50% of the reps in practice, then 75%, and then you're eligible to play. It's a 14-day process, and he would only be probably 12 days into that. That's why he's not going to play in this game against Notre Dame. I think Mike Tirico is going to join us on the program tomorrow. And he, of course, calls Notre Dame games, home games, Notre Dame against Clemson. And Mike's a Michigan guy as well, as is Rich Eisen, who will join us a little bit later on. Ooh. At what point, if you're a Michigan alum, and I said you vote, your vote counts. Today we're voting. Jim Harbaugh at the end of the year or other? If that's your vote, Jim Harbaugh or other? Can't abstain either. We'll take in mail-in ballots as well. Coming up, he's the great defensive end for the New Orleans Saints, Cameron Jordan. How are they going to prepare for Antonio Brown Sunday night? It's coming up.